How much faith do you need? How much have you got? That's how much you need. Do you remember being in the Cubs or the Brownies or at school, primary school, when you were encouraged to grow mustard and cress in a jam jar? Or in my case, to try to. This early experiment in hydroponics or some such process was baffling. Some wet cotton wool in the bottom of a jam jar, some tiny mustard seeds, and a few weeks later, struggling growth, green shoots, amazing. Not a 20-foot-high shrub of mustard like the kind that grew wild in Palestine in an extravagant display of fecundity, but something, if you were lucky, something there in your jar. The fact that Jesus uses the picture of faith being like a grain of mustard seed is a reminder to us that faith is a living, organic thing, not a static, lumpen entity. It's not so much about propositions as process and possibilities. It's not a job lot, but a journey. Faith, like the people who have it, is a breathing, developing, changing, disturbing, restless reality. And when the question is asked by those who ask such questions, how much faith do you need? The answer seems to be, how much have you got? That's how much you need. People have what faith they have. You can't suddenly dollop on top of them a whole lot more. That's not how it works. It's enough if you say yes. It's enough if you say maybe. It's enough if you say, I'm not there yet, but I'm looking, really looking. If the tiny mustard seed of faith is there, then that's where the life and growth will begin. And it will take as long as it takes to mature and flourish. You can't rush it. We can't decide for other people where their faith will be at the time we choose for them. However impatient we might be to see in them more certainty, greater commitment, faster progress, the gospel pattern seems to encourage us not to force things on, not to pressure people so that by their response they will satisfy our need for results now, according to our timetable. God's pattern requires us to allow, to accept, to affirm people where they are on their quest, in the process of their discovery. The spiritual spectrum along which we all find ourselves is wide. Those whose certainties are the very rock bed of their life, that might be you, and those whose fingertips are raw and bloodied from clinging on to faith just and no more, that might be you. One of the many things I love about the church and belonging to it is the fact that we are all at different points along the way. And that's not a problem. It's a reality and an enrichment. We're not religious clones holding to exactly similar understandings of our faith, standing all at the same place, seeing it all from the same point of view. This is the reality. And we allow that reality to be what it is. And if that seems loose and unruly, then that's because human experience is often loose and unruly. This is not to say it doesn't matter whether people are growing in insight, understanding, commitment and faith. No one is suggesting that the lowest common denominator is the final goal of evangelism and teaching. There is a goal, a loving, fruitful, Christ-like life for all who choose to follow him. But in due time, in God's time, at the right time. And always remembering that the fruits of that spiritual growth and the evidences of that spiritual life should be seen in truly Christ-like living. And we need to allow that there are different expressions of that presence of the Spirit. No narrow, confining definitions and prescriptions as to how spiritual growth should be understood or demonstrated. For some, it might be sheer practical expressions of Christian love in sleeves-up, sacrificial engagement with the brokenness of people's lives. For others, it could be questing more, going more deeply into the ways of piety and devotion. I wonder if you saw the documentary at the convent a while back. It was extremely moving. I was humbled to see the utter goodness and the true spiritual depth of the nuns of Poor Clare, who frankly could show most of us a clean pair of heels when it comes to walking with Christ, yet whose form of spirituality, whose style of worship, whose religious structures might not conform to some people's required criteria for recognition as the genuine article. There is no one-size-fits-all way of doing the following and the searching, the finding and the obeying. It's taken me a long time to learn that truth, but it is an immensely liberating truth. There is no one-size-fits-all way of doing the following and the searching, the finding and the obeying. And of course, because faith is a living thing, it can decline and die as well as blossom and flourish. Life experience can dent and damage old securities and reassuring certainties and be crushed to powder by what happens to us. People can change their priorities and their preferences. And in that review and reassessing, faith can be a casualty. Simply because it's more than intellectual agreement with a set of creedal statements, faith has to endure the mood swings and the intellectual upheavals, the changing in circumstances, the growing up, the choices we make that have consequences. What we believe is not immune from the challenges of the life we live, the things that happen to our body, our relationship, our careers. And the reality is that faith can be the first casualty of such a serious renegotiation with God about where he will be in our life and what we will allow him to do in us and with us. That's just the way it is. That's how volatile, fragile, vulnerable and real faith is. Because it's really part of who we are and is affected sometimes negatively by what really is happening in us or to us. Much as we might like it to be about harvesting and results, visible success, the reality we need to learn is that sometimes we are not the ones who see the results, and our calling is to plant and nurture and to be content with that, not over-eager to push and prod and hothouse those entrusted to our ministry and witness. And that's what makes it a labour of love for Christ, not a garland-strewn triumphal parade. That's what makes it hard and requires resilience, faith and faithfulness to serve and not to look for a quick payback, to love and wait, to wonder and pray and maybe sometimes not see the harvest, maybe not see it. Yes, to check out that we're sowing and planting in the right way, that we're not stuck in redundant models of yesteryear that just won't let anything grow in the changed climate of our times. But still to be patient and trusting and believing. Because here's something they don't tell you in the Ladybird Book of the Church. David Livingstone became famous in Victorian Britain and America as the great traveller, the missionary saint, arguably the only working class lad to become an unambiguous hero in Victorian Britain. Even the acerbic Lytton Strachey feared to criticise Livingstone when he debunked recent historical figures in his ironically entitled Eminent Victorians. The paring down to size was left to the editor of Livingstone's journal, Isaac Shapira, in the mid-20th century. Shapira pointed out that the supposedly great missionary, David Livingstone, had made one full convert to Christianity, his close but somewhat wayward friend named Sicelli. Livingstone, a legend who gave his life to a mission that seemed to produce pretty scrappy results. Yet in the end, Africa became a place of Christian conviction and celebration and brought a new rhythm to the drumbeat of faith. My son-in-law was telling me that he plants 100 trees a year in his little parcel of land beside his house. It will be decades before they're tall and strong. Young Ailey might be married and Stephen a grandfather by the time his trees, his fragile saplings, have gained their full majesty. But plant no saplings, you'll get no trees. So let's get on with the planting and the sowing and the praying and the believing and look to God to bring the task to completion, to capture the loyalty and the commitment of new followers, new men and women of faith. How much faith do you need? How much have you got? That's how much you need.